I hate it when you're on FaceTime with someone and you're about to say, end the conversation, and the other person hang up mad quick.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. Today we are back again to do another positional tiers show. We are looking at the shooting guards today. Yesterday we did point guards. So Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
Of course, I can't do the positional tiers without the man who writes the positional tiers articles over on Basketball Monster. Matt Smith is back.
Smitty.
Matt, welcome back.
Gosh, how's things?
It's good. We are ready to talk shooting guards now, to go through positional tiers. If you want to know what the idea behind positional tiers is, go and listen to the beginning of, go and listen to the beginning of the point guard tiers show yesterday, and Matt will explain that all there. We don't need to rehash that on all of these shows. So let's get into these. Tier one, Matt, it's pretty lonely at the top.
It is. James Harden all there by himself. Once again, another for sure top five pick, as we mentioned with Steph Curry on the point guards pod. James Harden, obviously a huge head start in points, assists, steals, threes and free throw percentage. And I guess the question to you, Josh, is who would you take first, James Harden or Steph Curry?
I would take James Harden first. We can talk about the addition of Russell Westbrook, and that's obviously a factor. Russell Westbrook replacing Chris Paul. But James Harden was just so far ahead of everybody last season that that brings him back to the pack, and we've got five guys absolutely in the discussion for the number one pick. But I would still go with Harden there. He's still going to have a high usage. He's still going to score. He's still going to get his rebounds and assists. He just won't be scoring 37 a night. He might be scoring 39. It's a big drop, but it's still enough to have him. He was just that much better than everyone else that he's still in that number one discussion.
Yeah, I tend to agree, and we've just written a who would you take in that pick one article, and after doing a bit of analysis and comparing all the factors, James Harden was my number one pick again this season as well.
I haven't decided at the point of us recording this yet who is going to be my number one pick for that article. I'm still working it out. But when I go through all those top five guys, the one guy out of those top five players where I can't find a downside to is Karl Anthony Towns. So I don't know if I'd take him there, but if you're very risk averse, maybe he's that guy. But we'll talk about him more on other shows. Let's move on now to the tier two of the shooting guards. We've got three guys in this group. And these guys, I'm glad they're all in the one tier. I'm glad you put them this way because I can't split them.
Extremely difficult to split. We've got Drew Holiday, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker, most likely at the end of the first, very early in the second round. I've done numerous mocks, and pick eight, I think, is probably the worst spot to pick this year. I even took Drew Holiday at pick eight just because I feel the most confident and comfortable with him at that range, rather than a Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Chris Paul, Joel Embiid all have sort of risk and load management issues. So I feel pretty good about Drew Holiday heading into the season. I think the additions of Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, JJ Redick, Davis will all help Drew Holiday. And I think he's just in for another massive season.
Yeah, I tend to agree in terms of concerns between these guys. There is so much concern at that end of the first round. I've seen you take Drew at that back end there as well, understandably, why you would do it. You know, Beal led the league in minutes last season. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. He could get hurt. He definitely won't be playing 37 a night. And Devin Booker, we just can't stay healthy. And not that he can't stay healthy, he can't stay away from minor injuries, and because the team's so bad that there's no incentive to play. Now, will the Suns be better this year? I think almost undoubtedly, yes. Will they be anywhere near the mix for a playoff spot in March when Booker's annual hand, leg, whatever injury crops up? Probably not. So then there is still a chance that he's not available in those head-to-head playoffs. But again, I don't think the Suns are a 17-win team. They're probably more high 20s, and that's going to give a little bit more incentive there. And maybe that keeps him healthy. But these guys, in terms of overall value, are just really, really close to each other. The addition of Rubio could hurt Booker because, you know, his value in terms of assist, you know, skyrocketed last season, and maybe that drops off a bit. He'll still have the ball in his hands, much like Harden in Houston, but maybe it's not going to have quite that level of upside. But again, on an upside point for Booker, he didn't shoot that well last season, Matt.
You there?
I am there. Did you hear my question?
No, I didn't. I just lost you then. So
my question to you was, it was more of a statement. Devin Booker, you know, did all he did last season. He didn't actually shoot that well.
He didn't. What was he? 42% from the field.
Yeah, about 34% from three, I believe.
A little bit, but he just had so much offensive load going through him. But yeah, I think, like I said, in the point guard pods with the addition of Rubio, I think that will really help DeAndre Ayton's game and get him some easier and better looks. Kelly Oubre having a full season, another season for Mikal Bridges as well. So, yeah, let's hope that Booker's field goal percentage can increase a little bit. I've also heard that, you know, there's a lot of people have concerns around Booker because his steal rate is so low, but there are quite a number of players later on in the draft that you can get who do help you in that steals category. So I'm not as concerned about that as some other people are.
Like, it would push his value higher, but it's not like, oh, I'm avoiding him because he doesn't get steals. Like, again, you can find steals guys. You can find his teammate, Mikal Bridges, later on, who might get you 1.6, 1.7 steals per game. Yeah, Oubre had a huge steal rate last season. There are plenty of guys available who can help you in those categories, and really, that's their main strength. So, again, it shouldn't be too much of a concern about drafting someone like Devin Booker in that early second-round portion of a draft. In Tier 3, Matt, there are two guys here. One of them, I think people would be, some people would have Jimmy Butler, I think, in tier two, and some people would have Luka Doncic maybe in tier four, but we've got them both in tier three here. So let's talk about them.
Yeah, I guess the way their projections fall out, and once again, their overall value, Jimmy Butler's at a 0.44 Z score, Luka Doncic slightly lower at a 0.34, but Jimmy Butler's probably durability and missing more than, playing more than 70 games just once in the last six seasons is a massive concern, and I guess personally drops him down a little bit. And Luka Doncic, he was already elite in points, rebounds, assists and threes last season. If he can improve his efficiency and his steal rate, which I think in particular his efficiency and his free throw percentage he could very quickly move from a top 30 player into a top 15 player, and we could be talking about him in tier two next season. So I think both of these guys are probably mid to late second round. Luka Doncic maybe even slides into the third, depending on your format and your strategy.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, you probably can get Doncic in the third round. Some people, although, again, I get a lot of comments, yeah, I'll take him in the top 20. It's all just going to come down to efficiency because the scoring will be there, the rebounds will be there, the assists will be there. He'll get a steal 1.1, 1.2 steals, whatever it is. But can he shoot 35% from three? Can he get his free throws to high 70s? Can he shoot 45, 46 from the field? Because if he can't do that, then he's not going to bring that back that value. If he can do that, then he can exceed this number. Whereas Butler, again, the injuries are the real concern. But I think we're going to see more Minnesota Jimmy Butler than Philadelphia Jimmy Butler, a 20-point per game guy. He's going to be, even if they start Goran Dragic and Justice Winslow, which we debated last podcast, Butler's going to be that guy with the ball in his hands the majority of the time. Assist numbers should rise back up. He's not sharing those assists with Ben Simmons anymore. He is that guy that's going to do that and be in that Josh Richardson role but actually be able to do it at a much better level. So, yeah, Butler's good on a per-game basis, much like we talked about Chris Paul yesterday, but, you know, can he stay healthy? And that is absolutely the concern you have. The other concern I have for Butler, Matt, is that the fact that he has been so keen to go to Miami, he's so keen to go there, obviously, there's one or two reasons for him to go to the beach or for him to just say, I am the best. It's not for winning basketball, because if he wanted to win, he would have stayed in Philadelphia. So it's not about wanting to be on the best team. It's about to say, I am the best player on my team. So, you know, is that motivation to be the best team or do the right thing always going to be? I don't know. I have my concerns that when things wind down and they're not in the playoffs, like, the standard Jimmy Butler March injury creep. I don't know. There's just some confusing motivation there.
It's a fair point, and maybe it's ego-based, and, yeah, he does want to be that main man and get all the hype and be on the highlight reel, or maybe it's a lifestyle thing and he prefers to be down a bit further in the tropics and hopefully avoiding hurricanes and stuff. But yeah, we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, totally agree with, like you said, he'll have the ball in his hands and go back to his Timberwolves days as opposed to his Sixers days, hopefully.
Let's look at tier four now. We've got three guys sitting in this group. We've got Donovan Mitchell, we've got Zach LaVine, and we've got D'Angelo Russell in this area. If one of these guys was to jump up into tier three, who would it be for you?
I think Donovan Mitchell can take that leap. Probably a little bit disappointing last season. A lot of people invested a second or third round pick into him. He did still finish the season as a top 50 player. So if he can boost his field goal percentage and get his rebounds and assists back to around 5 per game, he could bounce back into that territory. D'Angelo Russell's a really interesting one. I'm still not too sure what we're going to expect and how he's going to fit in there with the Warriors. I think it'll be good and be positive. I don't think it'll be, a negative in any way, and he's going to fall out of the top 50. But he's going to need to be doing a lot of scoring and a lot of ball handling there next to Steph Curry, because that Warriors roster just looks really average all of a sudden when you take out Clay and Durant and, bring in like Willie Cauley-Stein and Kevin Looney's probably the starting center there. So, D'Angelo Russell's going to have to make a big impact. Zach LaVine, I don't like him in this position. I think he can get some better value later on. He had one of his best statistical seasons last year. The Bulls were decimated by injuries, and we know Zach LaVine has some durability issues. He's only played 134 of a possible 246 games over the past three seasons, which is not good, Josh.
No, it's definitely not good. We need to, you do need to look at that. The other thing with LaVine is, what happens with Markkanen? Does he take that step up to be the number one offensive option? I think that's a real possibility. I agree with you that Mitchell's probably the guy who can jump into tier three here. It's all going to come down to, does he increase his free throw rate? He's getting some great experience with Team USA. The assist numbers, how are they going to look next to Conley? There's a lot of ups and downs there. I think his efficiency and free throw rate might increase. I think his assist numbers might decrease. Is that enough to push him further than last year? And Russell's going to play more than 30 minutes a game that he played last season. I don't think there's any debate about that. And that's going to push him into this tier four discussion for shooting guards. He's going to get his assists because the backup point guard on this team is Jacob Evans. So we're going to see D'Angelo Russell run some units by himself as well. It's going to be him and Steph, because the rest of the starting lineup is going to be Cauley-Stein or Looney, Draymond, and Alphonso McKinney. So who the hell else is taking shots on this team? There is two guys. There is Curry and Russell. And that is it. There is nobody else to take shots on this Warriors team, so they are going to have absolutely sky-high usages, both Steph and D'Angelo Russell. Tier 5, Matt, this one here is a little empty, just old Budrick Hield.
Hield is sitting here on his own now. He was one of the breakout players of last season, someone who you probably could have found or should have found in the 70 to 80 range and delivered top 50 value. He won't return that type of return on investment this season. You probably have to pay a top 50 pick. We have him projected just inside the top 50. I don't think he's going to finish well. I know he's not going to finish a top 20 player. He's not going to finish a top 30 player. He could be a top 40 player. I still think he'll be inside the top 50, but I think you're paying top dollar for Buddy Hield. He's a points and good for free throw percentage, but I think you, in terms of statistical scarcity, which I'm going to write an article about on soon, I think you're probably better off targeting, a few more rebounds and blocks or assists and steals at that point of range, because we know threes are the easiest category to find, and they're plentiful later on in the draft. So I just don't see the point of paying, a top 50 draft pick just to get, Buddy Hield's 3.5 threes per game when you can find them later on in the draft and off the waiver wire.
His ADP on Fantrax is 38, which makes no sense to me. It's also 82 on ESPN, which makes no sense in the other direction. But if you can get him down in the 70s, then there is real value there in Hield at that sort of a position. But you've got to look at what he did and go, where does he get better this season? Bagley having more shots and more minutes. Fox perhaps taking a step up. When I did the Kings team preview, Matt George seemed to think that Hield's usage would drop a bit, and that usage would go towards Fox as they look to make him the number one scorer. So that's a bit of a concern there with him. But I would never be looking at a 38-type pick for Hield. If he's in the 60s or 65 range, that is fine. If his steals go back up, there is room for him to get better as well. But what he did last season, where he averaged 21 and 5, is he better than that? Can he be better than that? I'm not so sure that we can get too much more out of Buddy Hield in that sort of an area. And there might be a bit of a step back as Fox tends to or starts to really assert himself. The next tier, tier six, is also just a one-man tier, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Some people will think this is high. Some people will think this is low. Some people will think he's a point guard. Matt, what are we talking about? What's your thoughts on Shai?
Yeah, I really like Shai coming into the season. In the article, I've compared him to an Eric Bledsoe-type fantasy game. He can just contribute in every category, boosted by his steals and blocks and his efficient scoring as well. And if we just want to compare the projections for a minute, we've got Bledsoe at 16.5 points, Shai at 17.5, Bledsoe hitting some more threes. They'll both probably get four rebounds a game. We've got Bledsoe with an extra assist, both at 1.6 steals, both around sort of half a block per game, both shooting 47% from the line and both shooting about 78, 79% from the free throw line. Sorry, I should have said 47% from the field and 48 to 49% from the free throw line. So very similar numbers, which just makes Shai so juicy at this point. And for those in dynasty leagues, if he can become an Eric Bledsoe and a consistent sort of top 20, 25 player, he's going to be huge. So, and once again, we know that when Chris Paul misses games, Shai's going to have a massive usage in that backcourt. So, yeah, really think he can jump up into and be a top 50 player this season.
Yeah, look, I think that's a real possibility. I know Kyle McEwen's really high on him, as we did that show a couple of days ago where we compared our projections. Shai, even last season, towards the end of the year, he played 31 minutes a night, and he was the 64th best player, averaging 15 points with 5 assists on 52 and 74 as his percentages, and that's just 19% usage. I talked about it before with the Warriors. Who's going to take the shots? We talked about it yesterday with the Hornets. Who's going to take the shots? On the Thunder, who's going to take the shots? It's Gallinari, it's Paul, it's Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, they're the guys who are going to have to take on that. Paul George, Russell Westbrook usage, Jeremy Grant's also gone. Yeah, I don't think we're just going to see huge amounts of shots funneled towards Steven Adams. I don't think we're seeing Andre Robertson or Terrence Ferguson becoming big usage guys. It's going to be these players. Shai, outside of the draft picks, is the jewel of the Paul George trade. Look, maybe he suffers a bit of an efficiency drop-off, but he got better as the season went on last season. And I think, again, if Chris Paul does move on or when he does get hurt, those assist numbers from Shai should increase. I think he's a lock for 30-plus minutes, and I'm really interested to see what he can do. And you can get him real late on some sites. 173 rank on ESPN. Of course, they have maybe their heads up their asses. I'm not really sure what the idea is behind that. Yahoo's got him at 75, which is fair enough. I think he beats that, though, and I think we're both pretty excited about what Shai is going to be able to bring for this coming season. Let's look at Tier 7 now. Two guys sitting here which offer really, really different fantasy skill sets, but both shooting guards, both in the same level of a draft. CJ McCollum, Josh Richardson. What are the differences between these guys? Because we always like to stress this. They might have the same rank or the same value, and people get value in a vacuum. It doesn't. Look, this is a great example that means absolutely nothing when looking at what these guys can do.
Yeah, sure. So we know that Josh Richardson is more of a defensive specialist. We've got him projected at about 1.4, 1.5 steals per game. Can also flirt with a block per game, whereas CJ McCollum is more of a pure scorer, more efficient as well. So like you said, different sort of skill sets, and depending on, you know, what you've done earlier in the draft and what you plan to do later in your draft, will probably depend what you need to target in this area. So, yeah, 14 points per game as to 20 points per game is a huge difference. But, yeah, 0.8 steals for CJ to, like I said, around 1.5 for Josh. Completely different skill set. So, yeah, it's all going to depend on what you need at this sort of range.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is going to come down to what you need and what your team is looking like. Richardson, when he was forced into a larger offensive role last season for Miami, saw the steal and block numbers drop off. Now, I think that offensive role is going to cut pretty dramatically. I think he's going to be the fifth offensive option with the starters for Philadelphia. But that should mean, theoretically, that he gets those defensive focus or the defensive focus back, upping the steal, upping the block rates. He's one of the best shot-blocking guards in the NBA, one of the best defensive guards in the NBA when he's got that focus on his game. And I think that's what we're going to see from Richardson this season. I've seen him go high in some mock drafts that I've been doing, like in the 50 to 60 range, which is not ideal, I think, for Richardson, because I just don't see that same role. But the minutes will be big. the defensive numbers is where it's all about. And as for CJ, we talked about it with Buddy Hield. Like, his value is in points and threes and very little else. I worry that I think he's probably one of the more overdrafted players with an ADP of 49 on Yahoo, where there are significantly, there's a bunch of guys I'd much prefer to have over him than, for example, he's at 49, Eric Bledsoe's at 58 in terms of ADPs on Yahoo, and that is not the order that I'd be taking those guys in.
I completely agree. Moving on to tier eight, we've got Marcus Smart for Boston, Lou Williams with the Clippers, Jeremy Lamb and Victor Oladipo for the Pacers. Now, Victor Oladipo is an interesting one. His per game value sits at just outside the top 50, but we do only have him projected for about 42 games. So, yeah, he missed the first half of the season. Unlikely he'll play in the 2019 side of the calendar. Yeah, and I did hit you up and like, Josh, where do you want to put Victor Oladipo on these tiers? Because he's an interesting one. To either A, have a number of reliable and durable players around him, and also B, ideally a couple of IR spots if you want to considering to draft Victor Oladipo. So, and then even when he does come back, he'll, you know, be on a minutes restriction, bring him back slowly, a few rests here and there. So, yeah, Victor Oladipo is probably not one who's going to get going until, you know, late Feb, March, just in time for head-to-head playoffs, hopefully, if you can hold him that long.
When you look at the replacement players option we have on the Basketball Monster projections, it drops him down about 20, 25 spots in terms of rank into this same area where we've got him in this tier. But there is concerns, and, you know, having a guy that you pick at, if you pick him at 50, then, you know, that's your fifth round pick who you're not going to see for 2.5 months. And it's probably going to be limited for another 3-4 weeks after that. That's a real concern. But maybe he is ramping it back up. We also have to remember is that people go, yeah, man, he was awesome. He was his first round guy. And he was the 10th best player 2 years ago. Last year, he was the 52nd best player and played 32 minutes a night. He had a knee. This is a quad issue that we've seen one player come back from in history, a different player, Tony Parker, a different type of player at an older age. And Parker retired, 2 years after that? Again, age is a factor in that. We just don't know how Oladipo is going to return from this. Will he have that same explosion? Will he be able to do those defensive things that he did 2 years ago? I don't think he will, because he didn't even do them last year. So I don't think that we should be looking at him as a first, second, or third round guy. So if you've got him in a dynasty league and a keeper league, and someone just messaged me today saying, yeah, I've got him, we keep three keepers, do I keep him for this year, for the year after? Like, no, I just don't think that you should be doing it, because I don't ever think that he's necessarily ever pushing back into that top 25 discussion after this injury. And given that that 1 year seemed like a real weird outlier with some of those defensive numbers. Now, on the flip side to that, Matt, Jeremy Lamb probably starts off stronger and drops off when Oladipo returns. But I still think that even when Vic is back, he's still going to get some minutes playing the two and the three, because Justin Holiday, the other option there, isn't good.
Yeah, and TJ Warren, you know, moving up a spot or two as well, he's also had some durability issues. So I'm not sure we can rely on TJ Warren to play, you know, 70, 75 games a year. So Jeremy Lamb, if you're looking for some points, rebounds and threes later on. And just on Lou Williams, there's no way he's taking 15 shots per game and averaging 20 points per game again this season with Kawhi and Paul George in town. So he could very well slip outside the top 100 come the end of the season. He'll have some big games when those two guys sit, but we just won't see that consistency from Lou Williams again this season.
The biggest myth in the NBA at the moment is, or even in fantasy basketball, is, you know, Marcus Smart, he's going to kill your percentages. He had a true shooting of 57% last year. He shot 81 from the line. He shot 42 from the field. And he shot 36 from three. That is not the destructive shooter that he was a few years ago. 42 is not great, but it's also not a disaster. It's not Terry Rozier. Now, it is the first time in his career that he's shot over 40% from the field, but he's shown consistent improvements in his three-point shooting and was more judicious in when to take those threes. I feel much more confident in Marcus Smart's shooting now than I did a couple of years ago.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because just looking at Smart, Williams and Lamb, they're all, you know, in terms of their rank, 90, 91 and 92. Just looking at their Z scores for field goal percentage, if we said to people, you know, which one of those players would hurt your field goal percentage more, I think the consensus would be Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
Now, actually, Marcus Smart comes out as the least impactful or negative impact in terms of that category at a negative 0.52. Lamb at a negative 0.59 and Lou Williams at a negative 0.83. So, pretty interesting when we've got those guys all together, and that Marcus Smart's field goal percentage is actually, like I said, the least negative impactful. I don't know if that's the right way, but hopefully you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's because of volume, really, because he's just not taking as many shots. They all might shoot the same percent, but if Lou Williams takes 14 shots and Smart takes 7, then you want Smart in terms of having a less deleterious effect on your team's overall field goal percentage. Let's move on to the next group of guys. We're in Tier 9 now, Matt. We've got three guys here. We've got Gary Harris.
Nice, Gary!
We've got Terrence Ross, and we've got Fantapants Kevin Huerter in there. Different types of players. A bounce back with Harris, a steady contributor with limited upside with Ross, whereas a real big upside second-year guy in Kevin Huerter.
Absolutely, and Gary Harris, we saw him. He was a top 50 player a couple of seasons ago. He could bounce back into that range if he can get his efficiency and his. You don't think he can?
You look at it, and his shooting percentages dropped way off last season, and I think they will bounce back pretty significantly. But he also played 34 minutes a game back then, and I don't think he's getting to that level. He had a usage of 21%. I don't think he'll quite be at that level. And the steal rate was really, really high, which was a little bit of an anomalous steal level for him that year as well, where he averaged 1.9 steals per 36. The 2 years prior to that, he was at 1.4, and then last year at 1.2. So I think the extra minutes, the added usage and the steal rate in that year all combined for a great top 50 year, I'm not sure he gets back to that. But in saying that, I'm pretty confident he's going to be better than the 168th ranked player that he was last season.
Yeah, you would definitely hope so. And you've got him projected at, it's still like 31 minutes per game. So it's still, a fair chunk.
Because you've got Malik Beasley, Monty Morris, Will Barton, all these guys who did step up. Barton, not so much. He stepped backwards. But guys who will not require Harris to play 34 a night.
Yeah, for sure. And once again, a bit of a steals and threes type guy. So if you miss out on Josh Richardson a couple of rounds earlier, you might like to, look at Gary Harris and see what he can do. But, he has missed 65 games over his last three seasons. Kevin Huerter, he'll be a popular late-round pick.
I've got him in a lot of
Again, Josh?
Yep, you're back.
Just going to say that, his end of season form saw him post, 11 points, 3.4 rebounds, 3.1 assists, a steal, and a couple of threes in 27.6 minutes over the final 20 games. So hopefully he can build on that really push the Hawks up the standings between Trey Young and John Collins.
I think he's going to have to take on some secondary creation role as well, which also gives him upside for assists. I think he'll finish at the rim better than last season, where it was really, really poor Huerter. So I think there's some big steps forward there. As for Ross, we just know who he is. He's going to bang in threes. He hits free throws at a high rate at low volume, and that's what he does. He's a really solid scorer off the Magic bench, but just no upside as opposed to Huerter and Gary Harris for this upcoming season. Let's go to Tier 10. Matt, this is it's a big one. There are a lot of guys here, so much so of you watching on YouTube. I couldn't even fit everyone's player's photo in here, so I just wanted a list of names. Evan Fournier, Jaylen Brown, Bogdan Bogdanovic, JJ Redick, Norman Powell, Luke Kennard, Malik Monk. We've got Eric Gordon there as well, and Smokin' Joe Harris to round it out. These are all, again, very different things there. My favorite player out of that group is Bogdanovic, but he's killing it at FIBA. I just don't know where the minutes are going to be for these guys. I'm not as big of a fan of Eric Gordon. There's flyer types with Malik Monk. There's solid types with Joe Harris. Just a mishmash of guys, but showing that there's just a lot of shooting guards available late.
Yeah, and I did look at trying to split this tier up, but they all, basically are what they are. Like I said, I love Bogdanovic as well, and it's a shame that, the battered Trevor Ariza in free agency and sort of clogged up that shooting guard small forward role, because Bogdanovic will now likely go back to a backup shooting guard role behind Buddy Hill. So that doesn't do his outlook any favours. Probably the one guy that I am most interested in this tier is Norman Powell. Just without Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green no longer there, which started either the shooting guard or small forward, and gives the Raptors a bit of a scoring boost there on the wing. Could be a popular points and threes option, but if he can increase his other counting stats, and in particular his steals, he could be a little bit of a smoky at this end of the draft.
And for those of our American listeners that don't know what a smoky is, Matt?
A roughie, a bit of a late round flyer for fantasy terms.
A bolter. Bogdanovic, look, Norm Powell's interesting. I just talked about him on the Raptors preview that we did last week, saying how much he does thrive when he's with the starters versus in a bench role where he's forced to do too much. So he's an interesting guy there. But there are guys here, your downside type of players like Redick, solid Harris typos, upside, complete upside flyers like someone like Malik Monk, who has just been a real disaster through the majority of his career. But the opportunity is there with Lamb and Kemba gone. Whether he can get himself sorted out to take that job remains to be seen, but I wouldn't put too much faith in that. But that's what we're looking at with these last picks, is flyer type options. Let's just round it out now, Matt, with tier 11. We've got three guys in this tier. Some people will say that some of these guys should be in that tier 10, and I can completely understand that. Josh Okogie, who is playing well for Nigeria, the Baconator Dwayne Bacon, and the rookie RJ Barrett.
Josh Okogie, going to be a steal specialist, racked up 1.2 per game in just under 24 minutes per game during his rookie season. So if you're looking for some late round steals, or particularly for streaming options, Okogie is your man there. RJ Barrett, probably going to be overdrafted this season.
Well, if people are looking at ESPN's ranks, he will be.
His opportunity is clear as day there in New York, but his counting stats aren't likely to be strong enough to counteract his brutal efficiency. And Dwayne Bacon increased his field goal percentage by 10% last season, resulting in 4 more points per game, but he's going to need to do a lot more across the board to stay on rosters for any length of time. But he is a player who could and should get 30 minutes a night, and they're tough to find this late in the draft. So once again, if you just want to try to get that home run, Dwayne Bacon could be worth a shot.
Yeah, I think he's going to start over Malik Monk. Now, if him and Monk played the same amount of minutes, I'd want Monk every day of the week, because Bacon does literally nothing else apart from score. He doesn't rebound or assist or steal or block. He's not particularly efficient, but he can score. And I think the minutes are going to be there. And I think he is the favorite to start at shooting guard. Okogie, I think, is also a favorite to start in Minnesota as that steel stream. And Barrett, again, the efficiency is a real problem. Can he get enough touches with every other ball hog on this team? If you had to take a flyer out of these three, which one would it be? I know who I'd take.
I would take Bacon, just because, there's A, I like Bacon, and B, that, there's no one there in Hornets. Love Miles Bridges, who we'll talk about in a couple of days' time. But, I don't see Okogie being on fantasy rosters for any length of time, and RJ Barrett, don't really have much interest there. So if I had to take one, give me Dwayne Bacon.
I would take Barrett personally. I just think there's probably a bit more upside there than those other guys. But it's hard to argue with the reasoning of I like Bacon for taking Dwayne Bacon. That is how all your last picks should be. Any food-related names should definitely be in your squad. So Jeremy Lamb and Dwayne Bacon on Matt's all of Matt's teams this year.
Yes.
That'll wrap it up, I think, for us, Matt, here for the shooting guard tiers. Let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter and what you've got going on over at Basketball Monster.
Follow me on Twitter at SmanSports. Coming up on Basketball Monster, rounding out the positional tiers, and then we'll have a statistical scarcity article, which is one of my favourites, really popular last year. So looking forward to writing that again and seeing which stats you need to target early and which ones you can find later on in your drafts.
All right, Matt, we'll talk to you for the rest of these tiers as well. Check them out over on Basketball Monster. Subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever else you find podcasts, and on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up, leave a comment, share it with your friends. Also check out Patreon, patreon.com/redrock_bball. Become a member of the Good Bloke tier and get access to Patreon-only mailbag shows and pre-game shows during the regular season. Follow me at redrock_bball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Donovan Mitchell.